Hey Boo, we're on to chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, called The Firebolt. Harry didn't have a very clear idea of how he had managed to get back into the Honeyduke's cellar, through the tunnel and into the castle once more. All he knew was that the return trip seemed to take no time at all, and that he hardly noticed what he was doing because his head was still pounding with the conversation he'd just heard. Why had nobody told him? Why hadn't anyone ever mentioned the fact that Harry's parents had died because their best friend had betrayed them? Ron and Hermione watched Harry nervously all through dinner, not daring to talk about what they'd overheard, because Percy was sitting close to them. When they went upstairs to the crowded common room, it was to find Fred and George had set off half a dozen dung bombs in a fit of end-of-term high spirits. Harry, who didn't want Fred and George asking him whether he'd reached Hogsmeade or not, sneaked quietly up to the empty dormitory and headed straight for the bedside cabinet. He pushed his books aside and quickly found what he was looking for. The leather-bound photo album Hagrid had given him 2 years ago, which was full of wizard photos of his mother and father. He sat down on his bed, drew the hangings around him, and started turning the pages, searching until he stopped on a picture of his parents' wedding day. There was his father waving up at him, beaming, the untidy black hair Harry had inherited, standing up in all directions. There was his mother, alight with happiness, arm in arm with his dad. And there, that must be him, their best man. Harry had never given him a thought before. If he hadn't known it was the same person, he would never have guessed it was black in this old photograph. His face wasn't sunken and waxy, but handsome and full of laughter. Had he already been working for Voldemort when this picture had been taken? Was he already planning the deaths of the two people next to him? Did he realize he was facing 12 years in Azkaban, 12 years that would make him unrecognizable? But the Dementors didn't affect him, Harry thought, staring into the handsome, laughing face. He doesn't have to hear my mum screaming if they get too close. Harry slammed the album shut, reached over, and stuffed it back into his cabinet. Took off his robe and glasses and got into bed, making sure his hangings were hiding him from view. The dormitory door opened. Harry? Said Ron's voice uncertainly. But Harry lay still, pretending to be asleep. He heard Ron leave again and rolled over on his back, his eyes wide open. A hatred such as he had never known before was coursing through Harry like poison. He could see Black laughing at him through the darkness, as though somebody had pasted the picture from the album over his eyes. He watched, as though someone was playing a piece of film. Sirius Black blasting Peter Pettigrew, who resembled Neville Longbottom, into 1,000 pieces. He could hear, though having no idea what Black's voice might sound like, a low, excited mutter. "It has happened, my lord. The Potters have made me their secret keeper." And then came another voice, laughing shrilly, the same laugh that Harry heard inside his head whenever the Dementors drew near. "Harry, you look terrible." Harry hadn't gotten to sleep until daybreak. He had awoken to find the dormitory deserted, dressed and gone downstairs to the common room that was completely empty except for Ron, who was eating a peppermint toad and massaging his stomach, and Hermione, who had spread her homework over 3 tables. "Where is everyone?" said Harry. "Gone. It's the first day of the holidays, remember?" said Ron, watching Harry closely. "It's nearly lunchtime. I was going to come up and wake you in a minute." Harry slumped into a chair next to the fire. Snow was falling outside the window. Crookshanks was spread out in front of the fire like a large ginger rug. "You really don't look well, you know," said Hermione, peering anxiously into his face. "I'm fine." "Harry, listen," said Hermione, exchanging a look with Ron. "You must be really upset about what we heard yesterday. But the thing is, you mustn't go and do anything stupid."
"Like what?" said Harry.
"Like trying to go after Black," said Ron sharply. You could tell they had rehearsed this conversation while he'd been asleep. He didn't say anything.
"You won't, will you, Harry?" said Hermione.
"Because Black's not worth dying for," said Ron. Harry looked at them. They didn't seem to understand at all. "Do you know what I see and hear every time a Dementor gets too near me?" Harry asked. Ron and Hermione shook their heads, looking apprehensive. "I can hear my mum screaming and pleading with Voldemort, and if you'd heard your mum screaming like that, just about to be killed, you won't forget it in a hurry. If you found out that someone who was supposed to be a friend of hers betrayed her and sent Voldemort after her." "There's nothing you can do," said Hermione, looking stricken. "The Dementors will catch Black, and he'll go back to Azkaban, and serve him right." "You heard what Fudge said," Harry said. "Black isn't affected like normal people are. It's not a punishment for him like it is for the others." "So what are you saying?" said Ron, looking very tense. "You want to kill Black or something?" "Don't be silly," said Hermione in a panicky voice. "Harry doesn't want to kill anybody, do you, Harry?" Again, Harry didn't answer. He didn't know what he wanted to do. All he knew was that the idea of doing nothing, while Black was at liberty, was almost more than he could stand. "Malfoy knows," he said abruptly. "Remember what he said to me in potions? If it was me, I'd hunt him down myself. I'd want revenge." "You're going to take Malfoy's advice instead of ours?" said Ron furiously. "Listen, you know what Peter Pettigrew's mother got back after Black had finished with him? Dad told me, the Order of Merlin, first class, and Pettigrew's finger in a box. That was the biggest bit of him they could find. Black's a madman, Harry, and he's dangerous." "Malfoy's dad must have told him," said Harry, ignoring Ron. "He was right in Voldemort's inner circle." "Say you know who, will you?" interjected Ron angrily. So obviously, the Malfoys knew Black was working for Voldemort. "And Malfoy'd love to see you blown up into about a million pieces like Pettigrew. Get a grip, Harry. Malfoy's just hoping you'll get yourself killed before he's to play you at Quidditch." "Harry, please," said Hermione, her eyes now shining with tears. "Please be sensible. Black did a terrible, terrible thing. But don't put yourself in danger. It's what Black wants. Oh, Harry, you'd be playing right into Black's hands if you went looking for him. Your mum and dad wouldn't want you to get hurt, would they? They'd never want you to go looking for Black."
"I'll never know what they wanted because, thanks to Black, I've never spoken with him," said Harry shortly. There was a silence in which Crookshanks stretched luxuriously, flexing his claws. Ron's pocket quivered. "Look," said Ron, obviously casting around for a change of subject, "it's the holidays. It's nearly Christmas. Let's go down and see Hagrid. We haven't visited him for ages." "No," said Hermione quickly. "Harry isn't supposed to leave the castle, Ron." "Yeah, let's go," said Harry, sitting up. "And I can ask him how come he never mentioned Black when he told me about my parents." Further discussion of Sirius Black plainly wasn't what Ron had in mind. "Or we could go for a game of chess," he said hastily. "Or gobstones. Percy left a set." "No, let's visit Hagrid," said Harry firmly. So they got their cloaks from the dormitories and set off through the portrait hole. "Stand and fight, you yellow-bellied mongrels," said, what's his name? It doesn't say who said it, but I figured I would say that. But I can't remember what that guy's name is. Sir something or other. Anyways, down the empty castle and out through the oak front doors. They made their way slowly down the lawn, making a shallow trench in the glittering, powdery snow, their socks and the hems of their cloaks soaking and freezing. The Forbidden Forest looked as though it had been enchanted, each tree smattered with silver, and Hagrid's cabin looked like an iced cake. Ron knocked, but there was no answer. "He's not out, is he?" said Hermione, who was shivering under her cloak. Ron had his ear next to the door. "Listen, there's a weird noise," he said. "Is it Fang?" Harry and Hermione put their ears to the door, too. From inside the cabin came a series of low, throbbing moans. "Think we'd better go and get someone?" said Ron nervously. "Hagrid!" called Harry, thumping the door. "Hagrid, are you in there?" There was a sound of heavy footsteps, then the door creaked open. Hagrid stood there with his eyes red and swollen, tears splashing down the front of his leather vest. "You've heard?" he bellowed, and he flung himself onto Harry's neck. Hagrid being at least twice the size of a normal man, this was no laughing matter. Harry was about to collapse under Hagrid's weight and was rescued by Ron and Hermione, who each seized Hagrid under an arm and heaved him back into the cabin. Hagrid allowed himself to be steered into a chair and slumped over the table, sobbing uncontrollably, his face glazed with tears that dripped down into his tangled beard. "Hagrid, what is it?" said Hermione, aghast. Harry spotted an official-looking letter lying open on the table. "What's this, Hagrid?" Hagrid's sobs redoubled, but he shoved the letter towards Harry, who picked it up and read aloud. "Dear Mr. Hagrid, further to our inquiry into the attack by a hippogriff on a student in your class, we have accepted the assurances of Professor Dumbledore that you bear no responsibility for the regrettable incident." "Well, that's okay then, Hagrid," said Ron, clapping Hagrid on the shoulder. But Hagrid continued to sob and waved one of his gigantic hands, inviting Harry to read on. "However, we must register our concern about the hippogriff in question. We have decided to uphold the official complaint of Mr. Lucius Malfoy, and this matter will be therefore taken to the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. The hearing will take place on April 20th, and we ask you to present yourself and your hippogriff at the committee's offices in London on that date. In the meantime, the hippogriff should be tethered and isolated. Yours in friendship." There followed a list of the school governors. "Oh," said Ron. "But you said Buckbeak isn't a bad hippogriff, Hagrid. I bet he'll get off."
"You don't know those gargoyles down at the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures," choked Hagrid, wiping his eyes on his sleeve. "They've got it in for interesting creatures."
A sudden sound from the corner of Hagrid's cabin made Harry, Ron, and Hermione whip around. Buckbeak the hippogriff was lying in a corner, chomping on something that was oozing blood all over the floor.
"I couldn't leave him all tied up there in the snow," choked Hagrid, "all on his own, at Christmas."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione looked at one another. They had never seen eye to eye with Hagrid about what he called interesting creatures and other people called terrifying monsters. On the other hand, there didn't seem to be any particular harm in Buckbeak. In fact, by Hagrid's usual standards, he was positively cute. "You'll have to put up a good, strong defense, Hagrid," said Hermione, sitting down and laying a hand on Hagrid's massive forearm. "I'm sure you can prove Buckbeak is safe."
"Wouldn't make no difference," sobbed Hagrid. "Them disposal devils, they're all in Lucius Malfoy's pocket. Scared of him. And if I lose the case, Buckbeak..."
Hagrid drew his finger swiftly across his throat, then gave a great wail and lurched forward, his face in his arms.
"What about Dumbledore, Hagrid?" said Harry.
"He's done more enough for me already," groaned Hagrid. "Got enough on his plate, what with keeping them Dementors out of Castle and Sirius Black looking around."
Ron and Hermione looked quickly at Harry, as though expecting him to start berating Hagrid for not telling him the truth about Black. But Harry couldn't bring himself to do it, not now that he saw Hagrid so miserable and scared.
Listen, Hagrid, he said. "You can't give up. Hermione's right. You just need a good defense. You can call us as witnesses."
"I'm sure I've read a case of hippogriff baiting," said Hermione thoughtfully, "where the hippogriff got off. I'll look it up for you, Hagrid, and see what exactly happened." Hagrid howled still more loudly. Harry and Hermione looked at Ron to help them.
"Shall I make a cup of tea?" said Ron.
Harry stared at him. "It's what my mum does whenever someone's upset," Ron said. Ron muttered, shrugging. At last, after many more assurances of help, with a steaming mug of tea in front of him, Hagrid blew his nose on a handkerchief the size of a tablecloth and said,
"You're right, I can't afford to go to pieces. Gotta pull myself together."
Fang the boarhound came timidly out from under the table and laid his head on Hagrid's knee.
"I've not been myself lately," said Hagrid, stroking Fang with one hand and mopping his face with the other. "Worried about Buckbeak, no one liking me classes."
"We do like them," lied Hermione at once.
"Yeah, they're great," said Ron, crossing his fingers under the table. "How about the flabberworms?"
"Dead," said Hagrid gloomily. "Too much lettuce."
"Oh, no," said Ron, his lip twitching.
And them dementors got me feeling ruddy, terrible, and all, said Hagrid with a sudden shudder. Gotta walk past them every time I want to drink at the Three Broomsticks. It's like being back at Azkaban. He fell silent, gulping his tea. Harry, Ron, and Hermione watched him breathlessly. They had never heard Hagrid talk about his brief spell in Azkaban before. After a long pause, Hermione said timidly, "Is it awful in there, Hagrid?" "You've no idea," said Hagrid quietly. "Never been anywhere like that. Thought I was going mad. Keep going over horrible stuff in my mind. The day I got expelled from Hogwarts. The day my dad died. The day I let Norbert go." His eyes filled with tears. Norbert was the baby dragon Hagrid had won once in a game of cards. "You can't really remember who you are after a while, and you can't see the point of living at all. I used to hope I'd just die in my sleep. When they let me out, it was like being born again. Everything came flooding back. It's the best feeling in the world. Mind, the Dementors weren't keen on letting me go."
"But you were innocent," said Hermione.
Hagrid snorted. "Think that matters to them? They don't care. Long as they got a couple hundred humans stuck in there with them, they can leech all the happiness out of them. They don't give a damn who's guilty and who's not." Hagrid went quiet for a moment, staring into his tea. Then he said quietly, "Thought of just letting Buckbeak go, trying to make him fly away. But how do you explain to a hippogriff he's got to go into hiding? And I'm scared of breaking the law." He looked up at them, tears leaking down his face again. "Don't ever want to go back to Azkaban." The trip to Hagrid's, though far from fun, had nevertheless had the effect Ron and Hermione had hoped. Though Harry had by no means forgotten about Black, he couldn't brood constantly on revenge if he wanted to help Hagrid win his case against the Committee for Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. He, Ron, and Hermione went to the library the next day and returned to the empty common room, laden with books that might help prepare a defense for Buckbeak. The three of them sat in front of the roaring fire, slowly turning the pages of dusty volumes about famous cases of marauding beasts, speaking occasionally when they ran across something relevant. "Here's something. There was a case in 1722. The hippogriff was convicted. Oh, look what they did to it. That's disgusting. This might help. Look, a manticore savaged someone in 1296 and they let the manticore off. Oh no, that was only because everyone was too scared to go near it." Meanwhile, in the rest of the castle, the usual magnificent Christmas decorations had been put up, despite the fact that hardly any of the students remained to enjoy them. Thick streamers of holly and mistletoe were strung along the corridors. Mysterious lights shone from every suit of armor, and the great hall was filled with its usual 12 Christmas trees, glittering with golden stars. It looked exactly like the Notre Dame dining hall, didn't it? A powerful and delicious smell of cooking pervaded the corridors, and by Christmas Eve, it had grown so strong that even Scabbers poked his nose out of the shelter of Ron's pocket to sniff hopefully in the morning. Sorry, to sniff hopefully at the air. And I think we're going to stop there on Christmas Eve. We'll see what happens the next day, tomorrow. I hope you liked that, my sweet. And I miss you very much, but I get to see you again on Friday. I'm really excited that I get to see you every single weekend for a few weeks. It's kind of cool, because you're my girl, and I miss you so much. I love you, boo. Sleep well. Good night.